You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Hey, what's up, you guys? Welcome back to another sick episode of the Noise Direction podcast. I am your co-host, Scotty Heath of Tank Crimes Records. With me, as always, is the lovely Matt Bacon.
Hey.
Coming to you from his new locale in London, England. He is now a lad, and I have been assured he's going to watch a match tomorrow with other lads and even enjoy a pint for just a few quid.
Gotta love the footy. It's like, I actually, like, as England, basically England never does well in international tournaments. And so the fact that they got to a quarterfinal is amazing. And we're basically like, if they win tomorrow, it'll be the first time that they got to a semifinal since 1996. Not even like won a championship, but first time in a semifinal in my entire life.
I don't care about any of this stuff, but that does not take away from Maddie's fandom and the worldwide enthusiasm. Now, Americans...
All I want to say is,
Americans,
if you want to, like, throw down with Europeans, if you want to throw down with Europeans and know about soccer.
Americans know soccer's big in South America and Europe, but I don't think they really realize how big it is, because Americans think that, like, American football is big here, but it's not at all compared to what footy is in Europe and South America. And in the summers when we're over there touring during the World Cup, you will be hard pressed to get people to watch your band perform if it is during one of the, like, final halves or quarters, or especially if it's, like, down to a goal, which it usually is. You will watch. We've moved set times around football games.
Yeah.
Like the club will be like, you guys shouldn't start until 9:30 because the game's going to go till 9:20. And most clubs will have a TV on, not like an American sports bar style, but like one TV. But everyone will watch and hoot, holler, and cheer. And the American bands are like, oh, I guess this is a big deal. And I've been watching that happen for 20 summers.
Okay,
still never been engaged. But
I want to share my favorite concert soccer memory.
Okay.
Let me take you back. Hellfest summer 2014. Do like a time travel noise, Scotty?
Okay.
Doodle-loo-loo. Can't just take my time travel noise, asshole.
I couldn't make it good because I wasn't using my hands, because my hands are in my pants. Just in my pockets, but when I did it.
Thank you for clarifying. That was needed.
Yeah.
Okay. There's a big controversy at Hellfest because Iron Maiden is going to be playing at the same time as a match between France and Switzerland.
Yeah. Now, this might not seem like a pressing idea for Americans, but let me assure you,
I almost didn't watch Iron Maiden.
Yeah. And which, like, is insane to me, but I've seen it with my own eyes.
Yeah. And Iron Maiden almost didn't watch Iron Maiden. But what ends up happening, this is the coolest thing ever, is Bruce Dickinson, between songs, comes out and tells us the score.
Oh, that is pretty sick.
And France...
Whoever told him to do that was, like, really smart.
And also, Bruce Dickinson speaks French, because of course he does. So you have, between songs, Bruce Dickinson telling you the score of the French soccer game in French, and France won 5-0.
Yeah, it's come a long way.
That's
of
fucking
phones. It's come a long way, or a little bit of a way, because of phones. Because I've definitely just seen people, like, on the fest grounds just watching soccer on their phones. But here's the thing about touring over in Europe in the summer is they also have fucking holiday, which we don't have. And everyone goes on fucking holiday the whole time. And a lot of the people that would want to see mine or your bands play are going to spend their holiday at some sort of a festival. So what happens when you go over there, like the headlining bands don't play other shows besides the festivals, and the festivals run from Wednesday, some most times Thursday till Sunday, you know? So a lot of big bands are just chilling out in hotels or in resorts or at lakes and beaches, holidaying themselves on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays. But other hardworking bands like us, like Municipal Waste, we still try to get a couple small gigs in. And this is where you can see some bands that, like, we play like way below our normal capacity on a headlining Europe tour, right? On these Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays between festivals, because everyone's just out of town or watching fucking soccer. And so, but it's a good chance for Europeans who can't make it to festivals to catch a band that normally plays, you know, a 1500 cap club or more in the bar where you see your friends' bands play.
Yeah, and it's actually kind of fun. Like the first time I saw Napalm Death, I was 16 or 17, and there was like less than 100 people there.
Because it was festival season?
Yeah, exactly.
And it was a weeknight, like, yeah, like a night off. It's really a cool way. Like we've done 100 person bars in Germany and England during soccer festival season. And then we'll go play in front. The crowd at the next show will be like 80,000.
Yeah.
So it mixes it up.
Kind of rad.
Mixes it up.
Yeah. And then Scotty has to like hold together Dave Whitty's drum kit, and which is what happened the first time we met.
Yeah. And then, well, what's funny is that then we go to shows where there's not even like room on stage for our full backline. Right. Yeah. We'll go from a show where they gave us a full backline to one we can't even bring in our rented one, or like there's no room for me to get on stage to help like shit not get knocked over from stage divers. But we also always do like fun stuff on those dates. Like there was a day in Italy two summers ago where we played this small town and this little bar. I think it was just called Rock Bar or something, but like there's other stuff, like there's no opening bands sometime. So I juggled. I was the opening act. I juggled to warm up the crowd, which was great. And then sometimes in these small clubs, it's great because you can see the bar from the stage, right? So I've done Scotty's Bottle Service, where I'll get a tray from the bartender and then bring up 5 pints. Like in the tray, and I of course have a history in food service and hospitality, so I can hold 6 because I need 1 pint for me, can hold 6 pints on a tray over my head and walk it through a crowd and directly onto the stage and feed my guys, and then take one for myself and do a cheers with everybody. It's a lot of fun. So are we gonna do a podcast today? Let's just talk about soccer. Let's talk about more shit I don't know about. Soccer, and I can tell you about things I've done while Europeans watch soccer. I have done the following. No, I want to talk about today vinyl. What's going on with vinyl? I think anybody who pre-orders from bands and labels, or anybody who buys physical merch, is well aware that we are well into a crucial pressing plant backup. It does not matter where your records are being pressed, though most of the vinyl in the world and in your collection of the last 20 years is out of a pressing plant in the Czech Republic called GZ. That is where all these
thank you for being inclusive in your Zed usage.
Did you like that with my Zed usage? Yeah. Most of the if you Google, you know, how do I press a vinyl record? Most of the things that are going to come up are actually going to be companies that work as power brokers between you and GZ. The biggest one, of course, and I don't mind giving this plug at all, they have 110% of my support and have pressed over 100 records for Tank Crimes, Pirates Press, right out of the Bay Area, right here in my backyard. They kind of were one of the pioneers of this outsource to GZ, because GZ is such a large and powerful manufacturing place that is capable of so much, but without, but it's kind of hard to just like get on their website and order as just like a small band or label. The customer service is really lacking. And that's really what you're getting from these outsource companies, is that they have an in with the plant. So if you're a small label that presses a couple thousand records a year, you don't have a lot of pull with the plant. But when your sales rep from the broker brings them in millions of dollars of sales every year, they pick up the phone when they call. So that's a good reason to use a broker. There's certainly other pressing plants in the U.S. That you can deal directly with. I find having the broker makes it a lot easier to deal with for me. So I recommend that, but you find your way. So why is everything so backed up? Pressing usually used to take like 2-3 months. We're at, some plants are quoting 9-month turnaround right now. It's insane. So what happened? Well, last year we had a global pandemic that we are still in, even though I went to a show last weekend, we are still in a global pandemic. Things just look a lot brighter in many places here in the United States, though not all. So a lot of bands pushed their release, you know, for a multiple of reasons. We've talked on this podcast, Maddie and I saw great success releasing records during the pandemic, because there was a lot of oxygen there without any tours, and with all the big bands pushing their stuff, there was a lot of space for us to get a lot of attention. We use that to our advantage. Well, that is behind us. That is no longer the case. There is tours being booked, tons of press going out with everybody. And it seems like every big band has a new record coming at the end of this year or next year. So on top of everybody pushing their albums to 2021, which surprise to many bands is that their labels are telling them, no, sorry, it won't be till 2022 now. Was a lot of bands stayed home and they would have been on tour, and instead they wrote and recorded a new album, because that's what creative people do. Certainly, if it's your livelihood, you wanted to stay active. And that was a great way to do it, was to just create more art while you're at home. There's so those two things happen. So that's one of the main reasons why we're seeing a backup. There just simply is a lot of new albums, and a lot of the artists that shelved their albums are artists that are pressing thousands and thousands of units, not, you know, 307 inches, though there's plenty of those also in the backup. Another thing that happened was labels and bands all had super sales years. I know at Tent Crimes, not only did we have our fastest selling and best selling record ever released in 2020, but all of our other records were selling great, and the selling back catalog all sold out. And so there's a lot of represses that need to be made, and a lot of record labels that were kind of taking it easy and certainly were ready to tighten their belt and pump the brakes in the pandemic, saw their mail order sales just go through the roof, and were hot to get their selling titles back in print.
There's more behind this, by the way. The other The other piece to understand is there's a lot of fucked up stuff within manufacturing in general, because of global supply chains being broken down by the pandemic. So it's not just like, yes, that there's more demand than ever, you know, especially with vinyl becoming more popular, yada, yada, yada. But a big piece of it is that, you know, it's the same reason shit's becoming more expensive from Amazon, you know, food's becoming more expensive. All of these other things are becoming more expensive because globalization is breaking down due to the pandemic, right? So it's harder to get some of these raw supplies that were being developed in other places in the world. So that's also a big thing that's fucking us over. And also, you know, like Jeezy have all the power. So, you know, they can kind of be like, fuck you.
Well, it's not that, because Jeezy's the only plant in the world that actually built new equipment over the last 5 years.
I know.
While everybody else was like restoring it. But now let me tell you about the different style of demand that we have here in 2021 is that I used to press 900 black LPs, black vinyl, and 100 color LPs, but usually just a plain color, what, you know, 100 on red or blue, okay? That would be a pressing. Now, a basic pressing, if I do 1,000 of a record or 2,000, I will probably do 3 to 5 different variants of colors, all wacky different splatters and half and halves and side by sides and ABCs and triple threats and fucking backyard bonanzas and hoedown hoot nannies and splitter splatter up all over both sides. Now, here's the thing about vinyl. Only a finite amount of records can be pressed in a day. It's not like printing where you can load something up and hit the thing and run the machine as fast as possible to finish the load. Each record pressed, you can look this up on a quick YouTube search. You can watch how a record's pressed, but it's basically a little puck of vinyl. They called it a puck because when records were mostly black, it looks exactly like a hockey puck. And they put that on the press, and then the press stamps out your record. Now, so if it takes 1 minute to make a black vinyl LP where you already have the puck ready and you sit it on, if that takes 1 minute, every vinyl, the ones you want, the ones you mail order freaks want, that has 2 different base colors plus 3 colors splatter, which is a very common order I make for the mail order versions, that probably takes 3.5 minutes for every 1 minute, right? Maybe even more, because instead of that one solid puck of vinyl, now the person operating the machine takes 2 half pucks or 2 thin pucks, puts them on each other. And then also they kind of like just roll it. The splatter is just like all these little dots of the vinyl. And picture like icing like if you had a fucking like a cupcake, right? And you put the icing on it and you got the sprinkles in a bowl and you just kind of roll the top of it in the sprinkles and now you got a nice coat. That's what they're doing. That's how they get the splatter on the puck and then put it in. So picture the amount of time it takes for the person working the press when they have to do that for each one instead of simply just grabbing a black puck out of a box and putting it on the thing. So that really slows down the plants, but it also really helps sell vinyl, right? So there's no way in and out of there. That's what the demand is for. The market has spoken and they want wacky fucking vinyl. So, I mean, I'm going to give it to you. All the labels that are like my homies are all doing that for you because they pay attention. Trust me, we would love to just do 1,000 black vinyl press. By the way, it would cost us like in some cases thousands of dollars less too. But here we are. So understanding that is crucial to understanding why else we're slowed down. Finally, a lot of people blame Record Store Day. Record Store Day is what made like the major labels want to make 5,000 fucking, you know, like Taylor Swift's butthole picture disc, right? Maddie's favorite. And that does back things up, right? And a lot of labels that don't participate in Record Store Day like to blame Record Store Day. They get mad at Record Store Day. I can't be mad at Record Store Day for that, because here's the thing. record stores, and I've talked about distribution here. I mean, I think that's a difference. A lot of labels exist. They sell out their whole pressing. If you sell out a whole pressing in your mail order, you don't give a fuck about record stores. I make entire pressings for retail only, so I give very much fucks about record stores. Record stores love Record Store Day. So as a record label, I do not see it fit at all to talk shit on Record Store Day. I can talk shit about some of the things and some of the reasons behind it or whatever. But here's the thing. Record Store Day split up into three different days last year because of the pandemic instead of their normal like one day a year. Because they were, you know, tightening their belt, pumping the brakes, wanting to see what was happening. Each Record Store Day subsequently broke another fucking record for sales. And the one, so I think they're doing two this year as well, which is crazy. Or they started doing like Black Friday Record Store Day. So it is a nonstop thing for record labels to constantly be pumping out stuff if you want to hit all these Record Store Days. But the records are fucking selling. The record stores are banking on it. And this last Record Store Day, like a month ago, once again, record sales for everyone. So the stores love it. So you can't blame them. You can't really blame Record Store Day any more than you could blame me for having five things on pre-order right now. So unless I can think of another reason, that's what's up with vinyl. Back to Maddie.
Yeah, so shit's fucked. Don't bitch about it because it's way more fucked for like a bunch of other people, you know? And I think that's really important to realize is that everything is like critically screwed. And
I'm finding that people are being remarkably patient because everyone gets it because we all experienced the pandemic together. It wasn't limited to one country or one section or any certain, like nothing. Everybody knows what's up. Everybody got it. I feel very fortunate because my fans have always just been so cool. Like even when I know other brands or labels, like even like deal with some bullshit on social media sometimes, like I just feel very fortunate. I really love, I don't know if it's a vibe I put off. I don't know if it's if the fans that we attract, but I don't deal with a lot of bullshit. And, if you're a bullshit giver to other labels and stuff, just please have a little empathy for what we're all going for. Now, I know what I wanted to switch it up to. Now that we've explained that, what can you do in the meantime? Like if you've got a new album and it's going to be 10 months for your vinyl to come out, you kind of should plan around it, you know? So why not bring CDs back? Don't forget how popular tapes are right now. Also, most people are listening to your shit digitally on their phone. So you could find ways right now as a DIY artist to kind of stretch your new release, which I wouldn't always recommend, but this is, you gotta, the whole thing about the music industry is you're just constantly adapting and navigating. So this is what we're navigating right now. This is what we're adapting. And so I just, for the very first time in the history of the label, did something I never thought I would do, which was set a CD release and an LP release at 2 months apart from each other. Because that I'm just trying it out. But what I wanted to say was maybe if you're gonna do that, if the vinyl's coming later, please consider somehow deluxing out your tape or CD release, whether that be something as simple as getting nicer packaging or adding something, a patch or a sticker in there with it, a nice booklet. You know, I mean, I don't treat my CDs lesser as releases. I still like to make sure that they have nice big booklets or foldouts and stuff like that. But I'm a jewel case guy. I like just the old jewel case and with a little booklet or accordion insert. But on this particular release where I'm doing the CD, I mean, it fits the release, but we went ahead and made this a double CD in a big, you know, triple accordion gatefold digipack with an extra panel that holds the 16-page booklet. And by, this is by all means a deluxe CD release, We also usually CDs are not limited. Well, I mean, everything's limited to how much it sells to. Most CDs, probably most CDs that get pressed 1,000 at a time and don't never sell that 1,000, though bigger bands and labels sell thousands and thousands and thousands. The CDs are not normally sold as a limited item, but for this particular release, we are going to make only 1,500, which for the corresponding band is a nice number that we should be able to sell on the street day. We'll at least ship them all on the street.
I just want to point this out. Even for my vinyl nerd labels, even Prophecy Productions, Ripple Music, yada, yada, you know, like real nerd shit. Those labels, like half their sales are physical sales are still CDs.
I still do really well with CDs.
And for certain eras of band, CDs do especially well. Like a perfect example is like November's Doom, where it's like a band who kind of got big in the late 90s, early 2000s. You know?
Yeah.
That's a band who we thought were going to do well on vinyl, but did much better on CDs. One of the biggest disparities I've ever seen. The record did great, right? And it's also one of the best they've ever done, in my opinion, not just because I signed them, no big deal, but just because they're rad, right? And it's like the type of fans who got into a band who blew up in the late 90s, early 2000s are the type of fans who are gonna buy a CD, you know? Certain subgenres are very CD-focused, especially if it's metal-focused around a certain time frame, you know what
they're
I mean?
Also, the price point on CDs now makes sense to print 500.
Yeah, CDs
It used to kind of be like, for the price break, it wasn't really worth it to do less than 1,000 because it went up by several dollars. But now it's up by like 50 cents. I've been doing the CD represses at 500. Just for space issues, because they don't sell that fast, you know?
Yeah.
But they always sell. And so you can do that too. I think the price point is important.
Just the margin on CDs is really good, right? Like the margin on CDs, like you're getting fucking, you know, 200 CDs for like $450. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think that you
sell those at $15 a piece.
What I was going to recommend is then if you want to sell a lot of them, go ahead and price that maybe at 10 and even lower, because what we're seeing now is we're seeing this great, you know, for all the talk about tape, how much the tape industry is like reboomed and stuff. I think the tape industry is booming in amount of releases. But most of these releases are still 300 or less tapes, right? There's just a total glutton of them. A CD costs less to manufacture than a cassette, but sells for more. But sells for more across the board.
Yeah.
Just something to think about when you're making your album budget.
Another point tied into all this. Here, are you ready for you're going to steal this, Scotty. You're going to love this.
Break it down for me, Maddie.
This is the big secret of CDs. A lot of your favorite records, a lot of your favorite classic records are 45 minutes or less because it needs to fit on vinyl. Right? You know, for a record to work, it needs to fit on an LP, which traditionally can hold 22, 23 minutes of music aside.
And that's pushing it too.
Yeah, but okay.
It can be pushed, but that's pushing it.
Yes, and there are other ways to kind of go beyond. And yeah, I think we have on Prophecy a 10 he record where there's 27 minutes on a side or something, and it's actually sounds pretty great.
Yeah, I've got a 27 minute side right now, and guess what? It's being recut at the plant because it sounded like shit. And it didn't sound like shit. There was a lot of distortion, which is exactly what the person who cut the vinyl told us was going to happen. We went through with it and now we're giving it a second run. So if you want success, stay at that 20 minute or below mark though too, you know, anyway, but it can be pushed.
Yes.
Another good reason to have a sales rep who can walk you through a lot of that stuff and communicate directly with the lacquer cutter at the plant.
All this being said, here's
the thing. That CD's got all that space, baby. 80
exactly.
Minutes.
Exactly. CDs have 79 minutes and it doesn't cost you any extra to put more music on it. So like if you are out there and you want to do, I don't fucking know.
Maybe you got some live tracks. Maybe the EP you released.
You have commentary tracks I've done. You have whatever. You have, fuck it. If your albums are short enough, you just throw two albums on that motherfucker. And you've just added a ton of value. Bonus tracks, demos, whatever.
You can hire Matt Bacon. Hire Matt Bacon to do commentary for you.
Yeah, exactly. I'll just talk. I just did commentary on this festival, Grimfest, August 14th. Check it out. And that was a fucking trip. Like, dude, because I did commentary for like 21 bands. Like, that was really fun. I'm actually excited to see what people have to say about it because it was like pretty, it was weirdly difficult, but it was like really fun to be like the sport jacket wearing host of a festival. You know what I mean? It was great. Shout out Nick Grima. Shout out Grimfest. Check it out. Yeah, like you have 79 minutes. So take advantage of that 79 minutes, you know, give your fans a surprise, give it an extra reason for people to actually want to buy, right? Like, it's like, oh shit, if I buy from this, I get their debut EP too. Wow. That's really cool. You know, like you just stack up the value and it doesn't cost you anything extra. So, you know, I even do like, what we did for a while, like Spotify and Apple Music were trying to get you to give them like exclusive songs. And so I'd have bands give Spotify and Apple Music like exclusive songs and have those bands only otherwise be available on the CD.
There you go.
You know, like the CD has the most space of any of these formats. So go throw some weird shit on there and call it a day.
You know? And thank you for listening to another great, super informative, infectiously interesting podcast, Noise Direction.
My man just learned what alliteration was. Take care.
Thanks for listening, you guys.
Catch you next week.
Hey, what's up? This is Blake Weiland. I'm the host of the Tone Mob Podcast. It's a show where I interview guitar people about guitar stuff. We talk about their pedals, their amps, their accessories, their preferences, all that stuff, as well as a healthy dose of whatever comes up. Topics have ranged from aliens to addiction and anywhere in between. Oh yeah, and pizza. We're definitely going to be talking about pizza. So get the show wherever you're listening to this podcast at. Just search The Tone Mob in your search bar and it will pop right up. Come join us. We're having a lot of fun. Thanks for checking it out.